Turn those unused consumer electronic goods into cold hard cash when you visit our show sponsor, Gazelle.com. There's over 250,000 different items they'll take off your hands, and they'll give you a paper check, put money in your PayPal, or cut you an Amazon.com gift card. You can't beat them. Go over and see Gazelle.com, show them some support, and let them know when you're checking out that you heard about them from Grizzly Production.
We are four new mommies beta testing parenthood. We are two Natalies and a Jennifer today, and we are the writers of MommyBeta.com, which is a site I hope that you are visiting regularly. And this podcast just has us talking about current events in parenting and also things that we've been talking about. Today we're going to talk about whether or not you'd rather have sex or watch the Super Bowl. Some moms rung in on that. Mommy fatigue, baby snacking, and we have a few book reports as well. How are you, ladies?
Doing great.
Tired.
Tired. Well, it's funny that Jennifer is the one who's tired because Natalie has some news that we think would make her more tired.
Well, yes, I am tired, but I've been napping a little bit because I am expecting another baby.
Yay!
So,
yay!
There will be another baby beta on the blog, and so I'm doing August. So my due date is August 8th, but because Dominic was a C-section, and for the reasons that he was a C-section, I'll probably end up having another C-section. So we're looking at August 1st for the second in the second round of baby betas. So I'm about 12 weeks behind Nat, which is funny because she was about 12 weeks behind me the first time around. So yeah. Gonna swap places this time.
I was so excited about this news, if for no other reason, because misery loves company. Because I didn't want to be the only pregnant mommy beta. But I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of overlapping.
Yes.
That's just sort of my sense.
The baby betas are multiplying.
They are. So now do we have to be mommy beta 2.0? I don't know. We might once all of us pull the trigger, we might have to change our tagline. I don't know if we get to be new mommies anymore.
Do you ever remove the beta tag?
That's true. I guess Google didn't do it until like a year ago or something, right?
On Gmail, they didn't.
Yeah.
I thought it was still on there, so...
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're always learning something new. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about in the books that I've been reading lately. And I've been very sort of tunnel vision about the things that I learn about and the things that I read are only the things that I'm going to face right then and there, because otherwise parenting overwhelms me. If I were to read a book about how to manage your teenager, I probably would jump off a bridge. I can only handle the little stuff now. And then I'm sure I'll be reading those books in... umpteen years, right? So right. I think we're always beta testing something new when it comes to parenting. Wait till they start having sex. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God, Matt.
So seriously. She's in your womb. What?
I know.
I know Sean is so nervous about the idea of possibly having a girl. Every time, you know, it's summertime and he sees, you know, like 13-year-old girls walking around in their short shorts, he just goes, oh my gosh, what are their fathers thinking? How did they let them out of the house in that? And I'm like, they may not have let them out of the house in that, but they changed into that when they got into their friend's car, you know?
Like, did you do that?
Oh, yeah. But I wasn't into short shorts. I was into midriff tops.
Ooh.
My belly saw a lot of sunshine in my teen years.
And the skorts. I was into the skorts. That's how I got away with the short skorts.
Ooh. I bet you're getting a lot of action or attention with the skorts. Those are super hot.
Let me tell you. I'm going to tell you right now, sitting here with my big pregnant belly, I rocked those skorts. I was something to see.
Oh, man. Those were the days, right?
They sure were. Well, Natalie.
Skorts.
What was that about skorts?
Maybe Natalie before he could sew you some skorts.
I don't know. I don't think I like skorts enough to make that one a project.
I think
skorts were never
back.
My thing.
They're going to make a comeback. You just wait and see.
Oh my God.
Are you ready to kiss your waistline goodbye?
Yeah, I actually am starting to. I'm 13 weeks as of yesterday, and I'm starting, like, I can still wear my pants, but it's more comfortable when I'm driving or sitting for long periods to unbutton them.
Yeah.
And I looked back at my, because I took baby bump pictures every week all the way along with Dominic, and I looked back at my first bump picture is at 14 weeks, and it's like, you can hardly see anything. So I think I'm more on par with where I was maybe at like 14 or 16 weeks last time. So it's definitely happening sooner.
Yeah. You don't have that elasticity. Although I'm kind of on par with the things that I'm fitting into.
That's good.
So that makes me feel good. Because I was worried, you know, they say with your second one, you balloon up right away. And so then I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to be a pig. And I've been, you know, I look portly, that's for sure. But
oh, my gosh. You look
very
great.
Different.
I gained 50 pounds with Elle. So I think I took the cake of all the.
And they all shed right off.
They did.
They're gone. That's for sure.
Last night I was just sitting there feeling like, because I've been fighting the flu, and I served dinner to Clayton, and I was like, tell me I'm the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. And he couldn't look me in the eye. He's like, he looked right above my forehead and goes, you're the most beautiful thing ever. I was like, you suck.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on, Clayton.
Pictures of when I was, you know, pregnant right before either I had the baby, or actually it was right after. You know, you just think the first time around, you have this vision of, oh, I'm going to leave the hospital and look all dainty and pretty and new mommy glow. Oh, my gosh, I was a pig.
Cute. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And it was particularly bad.
Like when I'm fat, if I get fat, which I don't want to do.
Jennifer, you had a ribbon in your hair, like a satin ribbon.
No. Seriously, I was looking at myself thinking, what was I thinking? Now I'm never going to let myself get out of hand.
C-sections make you bloat, so keep that in mind. I don't even recognize myself in the pictures of the day after the baby's born.
Oh, yes. Or so we say. We have
my face is like crazy.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this because one of the, I guess, blog posts that have been making the rounds lately is about feeling sexy and how moms, 80% of moms would rather spend the Super Bowl in the bedroom, either having sex or sleeping, rather than actually watching the Super Bowl. And it's just funny because you don't feel like the same sexy person that you were before the baby. That's for darn sure. And so I thought that we could ring in what we would rather do and how this sort of makes us feel. Like, we could start with Jennifer. She's the sexy one.
Oh, please. I know I would definitely choose, you know, sex in the bedroom over watching the Super Bowl. I'm not a big, I mean, personally, I've found the last couple of Super Bowls pretty boring.
But Madonna's performing.
Really?
That's the only thing that puts it over the edge for me.
I didn't know.
I just don't even get into the halftime shows anymore. The best thing about it, personally, to me, is the ads. But if to be honest, I mean, how long are we talking about in the bedroom? Because
the Super Bowl is pretty long.
Yeah, you can do both.
Exactly. I don't think we've had any Super Bowl marathons here for quite some time.
What I'm most excited about is I'm kind of on the fence on whether I would go for a nap or the Super Bowl, but only the Super Bowl because of the snacks.
Yeah.
Do the sex, then have the little sleepy time that you have afterwards, maybe an hour power nap. Wake up, have your yummy, delicious snacks.
That's
DVR the
idea.
Controls, rewind it. And
do you think the people who are coming over for a Super Bowl party will mind if I follow that agenda?
We'll be right back. You guys just entertain yourself.
What's that movie, Talladega Nights, where it's like, everyone look away. Y'all look away.
Just another reason for me not to go over to your house for the Super Bowl.
Oh, man.
No, my in-laws are coming over, so I wouldn't.
That might be awkward, but they've already seen you naked, right?
Yeah. They have seen me naked. That's right. If you haven't read that post, head on over to mommybeta.com and find out my experience with the baby monitor and stripping down in front of my mother-in-law. But it's funny that we have to choose, right? Because it used to be we didn't have to choose. We could have sex and then eat the snacks and then watch the Super Bowl. But with babies, we certainly can't do that.
The timing is a little bit more limited.
Definitely.
Well, you can ring in and tell us what you would rather do at mommybeta.com or tweet us at mommybeta. And speaking of timing, Jennifer wrote this really poignant post, I thought. Did you write this last night or today?
I wrote it last night. I've been thinking about it for about a week.
Well, she was writing about how she's just exhausted, about her husband works long hours, and she's a full-time mommy, but work-at-home mommy. And, you know, chasing after a little toddler is exhausting. And I think you put like 60 little caveats there about how, like, I'm not complaining. I don't mean to complain. And then Alex wrote us all an email and said, it's okay to complain. This is exhausting. And if you don't complain, I think there's something wrong with you. And someone said to me once at work, you know, if you're not overwhelmed, there's something wrong. You're supposed to be overwhelmed by it. But tell us a little bit more about your schedule and why it's just draining on you so much.
I think maybe I just haven't been venting enough about it. Or maybe we've just hit a point where I think it's a 15 months, and I read somewhere that's a milestone month. So she's getting to be more active, or particularly active this month, and is forming her own opinions and her own thoughts on what she wants to do. So I'm seeing a lot more tantrums. And my husband is working later hours, so we picked the bedtime we talked about before from 8:30 in the evening. Thankfully, she doesn't wake up until 7:30 or 8 in the morning, so I'm very lucky there. But to be honest, the time period from 5 to 8 p.m. is really, really long, especially since, you know, I call my husband and he's like, yeah, well, probably won't make the ferry. I probably won't be home until 8:30 or 8:45. And, you know, I can keep Elle up and wait, but we don't eat out much. So usually either I'm starting dinner during the witching hour of whenever she's getting fussy and wants me to hold her and wants attention and that kind of thing. Or I'm making dinner when he gets home and he takes her at 8:30, and we don't eat till 10. Like, I have had so many meals when I've eaten at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. I mean, that's probably our average. And then we go to bed around midnight, because then I start working on this other site, Flacklist, putting more time and effort into that. And then we have the blog, and then I'm also a PR consultant as well. So it just gets exhausting, especially now on the weekends, because we don't have a weekend. And I love being with my daughter, and I love spending time with her and teaching her things and seeing how she's growing and learning, but it's tiring. And it just gets exhausting. And I just feel guilty saying that, but I don't know what else to do. I mean, I could complain for days about my job before, but I feel so horrible if I'm complaining at all about now, because of the situation and because it's my child.
I don't think you need to feel guilty. I think everybody understands how hard it is. And there was that post that circulated a while ago. Natalie actually sent it around to us, Mommy Betas. It was about not seizing the day. It was on Huffington Post. And basically it was this mom talking about the same things that you're saying. Like, she feels, you know, that not every single moment of every single day is going to be something that you're going to look back on with fondness. You know, like, this is a hard job, and there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, this part's not fun, but there are parts that are amazing and it makes it worth it. But, you know, keeping it all inside is not going to help anybody. So I'm really glad that you talked about it.
Totally. Well, it's just, you know, you're changing your diaper and they're screaming and not wanting to lay on their back, and there's poop everywhere. And you're like, seriously, I don't enjoy changing your diapers just as much as you don't like having them changed. You just lay here. I don't want to get poop everywhere, all over my mother-in-law's white blanket. But I thought it was also funny is one of my other former bosses, mentors, friends, who's a working mom. She has this blog, Woe Moments, that I share sometimes. And a long time ago, right after I think she started going back to work, she said she shared a blog post on guilty pleasures of working moms. So sure, we miss out on this and that, but, you know, there are a couple things that are kind of nice. You know, the fact that you can get your morning cup of coffee and sort of relax and take in what your day is going to be about. And then there are a couple of other things that I can't necessarily remember right now. But I just thought that was interesting, too, because I totally agree that working moms, I mean, I would not want to be in the corporate environment. I'm so happy that I can work from home in my pajamas and all of that. But there are some benefits to it, too, I think.
Well, I think that every situation is different, though, because I know we have a lot of moms that they don't have a choice. They have to go to work every day. My mom did the same. My mom went back to work when we were 6 weeks. And she said that was just as hard. And, you know, recently I had a little kind of mini breakdown in the parking lot, you know, crying, going to get myself frozen yogurt about how I'm exhausted, I'm in pain, because of that back issue that I told you about recently. I've had the flu, You know, it's just a lot to deal with. And my mom was like, well, you know, like there are certain things, like I lost it at this time, I lost it at this time, you guys just didn't know. Yeah. And so the fact that I thought my mom handled it all beautifully, I didn't see that when she broke down. I didn't see when it was hard for her. I thought that she was effortless. So I'm holding myself to a standard that doesn't exist. And sometimes, you know, with pregnancy, the same thing. Like, I looked at, especially like Natalie, you know, I mean, you were just like glowing and you, you know, loved pregnancy and you were posting all these pictures on
Facebook. It's harder this time around.
Of your shower and, you know, like pinning all of these things like on your Facebook about the beautiful nursery. And I'm like, this girl is loving this and I'm in pain. What's wrong with me? You know, so if we don't say things like that, then I think that it makes those of us who are feeling overwhelmed feel bad.
Yeah.
About it. So, Natalie, stop being so freaking perfect.
Well, honestly, like last time, I don't remember. I don't know if it's worse this time around or if I just it's harder with the toddler or what it is. But I don't remember disliking early pregnancy last time nearly as much as I've disliked it this time. Not to scare you, Jennifer. But it's just been it's hard with, you know, a toddler and, you know, you have, like, I've had some food aversions and, like, I've got to feed the kid. And if the kid wants to eat the thing that I don't want to look at, you know, he doesn't eat very much. So if that's what he wants to eat, that's what he's going to eat. And I'm going to feed it to him and I'm going to want to puke the whole time. But, you know, that's what I do. So I think, you know, some stuff like that is harder this time around. You get less choice. You know, you can maybe take a nap when he's taking a nap, which is awesome when it can happen. But, you know, you can't just, because I was working at home last time too, so I could just nod off here and there. So yeah, I mean, it is harder, and I'll probably write about that to keep the honest ways open, so you know people don't think that it's all tea and cookies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't get sick the first time around, and I didn't really feel nauseous or anything. So, you know, if we're lucky enough to be blessed with a second baby, then I'm hoping that's the case too. But I'm also concerned. I didn't feel like I was, you know what, actually, right when I learned I was pregnant last time, it was right around when the Haiti earthquake had happened. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I didn't know I was pregnant yet, but I was watching all the footage on TV, just bawling. Bawling, calling, who can I give money to, you know? And of course, it was a very tragic incident anyway, but I just felt definitely more emotional. And I don't know how that's going to play into how, you know, how I relate to or handle certain situations. You know, if Elle's really upset and I'm trying to do something, if I'm going to be more hormonal or emotional or anything like that. I don't know if you ladies have experienced that.
Yeah, you definitely do. And you feel sort of the weight of this little person. And am I doing right by him by giving him a sibling at this point in time? Is this the right time for my family? And then, you know, when something overwhelming happens, you can't. And I try so hard not to break down in front of him because he didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, they sense that stuff so much. And Natalie had written an email, I don't know if you mind me sharing, about how, you know, you had a little mini breakdown just during a diaper change or a bath time or something.
I was actually just going to talk about that.
And it made me feel better because, again, I think I held myself to, like, the you that I see on Facebook or the you that I see on Pinterest is pretty and polished and always happy. And maybe that's, you know, and so when you guys both say, like, we are overwhelmed too. We cry at, you know, things that maybe are not worth crying over. Then I feel better about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, anything from, like last night I was watching Tori and Dean because that's my guilty pleasure. And she had her third baby in this episode and it was, you know, the baby kind of being held by the older kids. And I was on the couch totally crying and Sean was laughing at me hysterically. Yeah, she had a third baby. So I was, you know, crying about that. But then also, like as Nat mentioned, this was probably about a month or two ago now. So I was just pretty early in pregnancy and my hormone levels, like I don't have big mood swings, but this was just a hard day and it was bedtime. And Dominic was he wouldn't get in his pajamas on and he was pinching me and he did something that hurt me physically. And it just kind of like all came out. Like I just started hysterically crying. And it really freaked him out. And I felt bad about it. And Sean came in and got him and kind of took over the process. And a few minutes later brought Dominic in to me to say goodnight. And, you know, like Dominic said he was sorry. And I told him I was sorry for crying and that, you know, mommy's okay and that kind of stuff. But it was to see this look on his face, like, oh my God, what did I do to mommy? And it was I probably shouldn't have done it. Like, if I had had the control to not do it, I wouldn't have done it. But looking back, like, he knows he can hurt mommy now, you know? Like, he knows mommy cried because of something he did, and that's not something he's supposed to do. And I think maybe it was a lesson for him, because every once in a while he'll still kind of talk about it a little bit. So, you know, it's, you know, we parent by the seat of our pants. You know, you can read all the stuff you want, but so much of it is just instinct and what happens. So I think, you know, we do what we can.
And in a lot of ways, we choose how we feel. But when it comes to emotions, and especially with parenting, something that's so charged in our lives and we want to do so well, we don't always get to choose how we feel about it. We feel emotional, so we feel emotional, and that's it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can do that. Like, you know, I've been having a really hard week because I was so sick, and my back hurts so much, and I can move so little. And it was just really hard, and I finally just called my mom and said, please book a flight to come and visit me. And so she's coming in 3 weeks. And, you know, as I was sort of going through this, I was like, I know that 90% of this is mental, that I'm in a funk, and that I can – there are certain things I can do to get myself out of this funk. Like, I can get up a little earlier and take a shower and put on makeup so that I don't feel like a Sasquatch. I can – you know, and it helps a little, because then I don't – I feel awful, but I don't look quite so awful. So that helps. I can – you know, like, I can get up a little earlier, and after I, you know, get dressed in the morning, I can do some stretching. That helps. You know, so there are little things that I can do, and I'm still going to be in pain, I'm sure, for the next 15 weeks. But, you know, so some of it I can choose and some of it I can't.
Yeah, I think it's hard, and it's good that you're doing it, but realizing where to channel the energy or the frustration or whatever it is and how to get out of it. Because I start sitting around and I'm trying to figure out what should I do, you know, or who should I talk to about, because I don't want to get angry at my husband because he's working really hard, obviously, to put food on the table, and it's making it possible for me to be able to work from home and take care of Elle. And so on the weekends and things, whenever things have picked up recently and he's having to work then, it's sort of like going in through your day in and day out of the whole thing you do all week. And it's just hard, too, because I know that he wants to spend time with Elle and play with her and all of that. But, you know, he has other things that he has to do. So it's hard for me to not get upset about, you know, the fact that I'm kind of doing the same thing all week long and not get upset at him, because I know he misses, you know, our old way of life, at least for now.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know, I don't know if you girls feel the same way about, you know, your husbands and not feeling like, you know what, I need a break. I need to take a second. I need to be by myself. I just need a moment to be alone and not feel like you're asking the world from them, because, you know, they are at work and they are away and they are missing these moments, but they're also, you know, getting to take a break if they need to. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to go to the bathroom with someone on their lap.
It's true. And then I feel bad about not being the person that I was. Like, I used to be such a great reader of current events and politics, and, you know, it takes everything I've got to follow along with the events of the world. And sometimes Clayton will come home and be like, what do you think of this new Android tablet? And I'm like, I don't know, and I don't care, you know, whereas I always cared about this kind of thing. And then he's like, well, I just asked, you know, I'm sorry if I upset you. And I'm like, well, it must be nice for you to be able to follow everything, you know. And so that's not fair to him. He's just trying to connect with me in the ways that we always did. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm up to my ears in baby smoothies, you know.
Yeah. Let's talk about potty training.
Yeah. Which I can. I just read a whole freaking book about potty training. I mean, he read a book about the, you know, Grover Cleveland, which he thought was fascinating, and I read a book about potty training. So, you know, you have to relinquish a little bit of who you are and then just have normal expectations of yourself and realize that, like, this was in our life not too long ago, so it's going to be jarring no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, let's move on and talk about our great show sponsor, Gazelle.com, because we are so glad that they are sponsoring the Mommy Beta podcast. They are a website that allows you to sell your stuff and get money for your stuff, specifically consumer electronics. So look around your house, see the things that you are not using, and then type them into Gazelle.com and see what you can get for them. You can either get an Amazon gift card, which is worth more than the value that they promise you because they want you to use Amazon, or you can get a check in the mail or a PayPal payment. They'll even help you ship that thing. And if by some reason you have something that's not really worth anything, they will also take it off your hands and recycle it in an eco-friendly manner. We have some of those little Kodak Polaroid cameras that came out recently. They're about 3 years old, and I guess Polaroid thought people wanted to take actual Polaroid pictures again, but the pictures are not good, and the film is really expensive, and why would you do that when you have a digital camera? So I'm like, what are we going to do with these things? We can't even sell them. But I don't want to just toss them in the trash because it is an electronic, so right. We're going to send them in to Gazelle.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, there are always recycling programs in your town, but then, you know, 60 Minutes did that expose about the fact that they still go to China and leak chemicals all over Chinese children.
Oh,
so,
really? Oh, missed that one.
Yeah, so at least, you know, Gazelle's a company I know and I trust, and I know that they're not sending it to a landfill somewhere. So check out gazelle.com, and you can tweet them, gazelle_com, and tell them you heard about them on the Mommy Beta podcast. All right, so let's talk about this other article that I think it was Jennifer that found this about baby snacking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Want to summarize?
Sure. So basically, they did a study, and I think it was over, was it a number of years? I didn't get to look so closely at it because we're reading so much. But basically, the premise of the article was that they looked at kids at a certain age, and about how they videotaped them on how they ate their snacks and their snack times with their moms. And then they looked at them again 3 years later, and what they found was that the kids whose moms were a little more pushy during snack time when they were younger and it kept forcing them to eat, one more bite, actually were overweight at 2 or 3 years.
I think it was 3 years, yeah.
3 years.
They said three.
And so what they found was that they felt that the children, the parenting or the what the parents were doing were overriding their little one's ability to listen to the body's natural satiety signals. So the brain's way of telling you to stop eating. So they were just listening or relating back to those experiences with their parents when they're saying, eat, 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 instead of saying, you know what, I'm full. I don't really want anything right now.
Well, I thought that this was interesting because Natalie and I are dealing with the picky eaters, especially the part about overriding their own ability to listen to their own body's natural signals of being satiated. And I don't think I've really thought of it that way because I'm keeping track of everything he's eaten all day. And then at the end of the day, I'm like, that's not enough. I need to force feed you more. Or, you know, I know that he'll wake up hungry. And so it sort of made me question my own, like, my tabulations. Maybe he just doesn't need it. I don't know. What do you think, Nat?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think my pediatrician said this before, and I've read this before, that toddlers just don't need that much food, which is interesting. I mean, I guess part of it is because we're thinking about when they were babies and they, you know, they ate tons of puree and they ate all this yogurt and, you know, they were having breast milk or formula or whatnot. And they were taking in a lot of calories, but they were also growing so fast. I mean, remember, you have a whole new size of clothes every 3 months, whereas once you hit two, those clothes in theory last like a full year. So their growth rate slows down so much. I think we don't take that into account, that they just don't need as much food. And that, you know, they really can, you know, tell you when they're hungry and when they're not. And I think this story's interesting that it's just about snack time. Because I wonder how this relates to meals. I feel like with snacks, I'm not pushy at all. If he wants snacks, he can have snacks. And if he doesn't, then I'm not too worried about it. But it's more in the meal time where I'm like, okay, you know, like try to eat a few more bites, you know, try to have a little bit more. And I would think it's got to be related, right? Because it's still that process of, you know, them not listening to their bodies when they're full.
Was it one of you that shared an article recently about the fact that kids get more veggies and fruits if they have more snack times and not focused meal times? Does that ring a bell with anyone?
No, I didn't see that.
There was one that was about if their main course portion size was smaller, they would eat more fruits and vegetables. But I remember
that.
Having the frequency of snacks.
I'll have to look back at that and see. But maybe that would, yeah, because all snack times and meal times are kind of similar. I have a problem with she just likes to eat too much. But the problem is I've given her a couple of sweets a few times and she knows where they are now. like brownies. I made brownies the other day in our brownie pan. And so we walked past it. She's like, nah, 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 nah. And doesn't want to eat what I'm trying to give her and just wants the brownies. And it's funny because my mother-in-law the other day, we were, Natalie Gafori and I went to a museum and they had an ice cream truck outside. So I got some ice cream for Elle. And I told my mother-in-law later, and she's like, yeah, you need to be careful with that, though. You don't want it to get too fat. I'm like, what? Really? Do you think? And it's funny because I had never really thought of it because, to be honest, I was a big baby. I was bigger than her, I think, Elle. And I think that I was probably the tallest, biggest kid in my kindergarten class. And I guess either I stopped growing or something because I'm kind of a string bean and eat kind of – whatever, but
one of those people everyone hates.
Yeah.
Mom, she just had this thing, okay, well, we'll just give you what you want to eat and then you'll figure it out. So I guess that's sort of where the balance came in, or I don't know if my metabolism was able to deal with it or what. I don't know. So I'm not taking the same mentality with Elle because I want her to have healthy food and what she's eating.
And a healthy relationship to food too.
Exactly. Right. But I'm not wanting to deprive her, but I'm also wanting to make sure she gets enough food because she's one of those kids. We went to a party and she was literally just hanging out of the buffet table and just wanted to sit over there.
She ate pizza out of my husband's mouth.
What?
Yeah. So we had a Halloween carving party over here and Sean was lucky enough to be sitting by Elle while he was having dinner and feeding her at the same time. And I don't know how much pizza Sean actually got because Elle was wolfing it down.
I'm pretty sure he like took a bite and was chewing it, and he's not always good about chewing with his mouth closed. And I think she reached in there and took a piece out.
She
That's
likes
a
it
girl who she knows what she wants.
Totally. Yeah. So I mean, on the other end of the scale, you know, it's funny because now I'm having to think about, because my mother-in-law said, well, maybe you should move her to 2% milk. And I talked to my pediatrician and she said, no, you need to keep her on whole milk until she's 2 because it's for brain development. It's not about weight. Oh, right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they need the fat for their nervous systems and their brains.
Yeah.
Although I think Dominic's going to be on 2% or on whole milk until he's like 16 because...
Well, that's what we drank, you know, in Arkansas growing up, and that's what my family still drinks.
Although, you know, I went back to whole milk for myself and my husband recently because we don't drink that much milk, and I'm nuts about things that are processed, and I read an article recently about when they remove fat from things, how they need to put other things back in. Mm-hmm. So I don't really like to buy I don't like to buy low-fat yogurt. I don't like to buy low-fat. Like, I'd rather just give my family the real stuff and have us have a balanced attitude about it. And it seems to be going okay. And, you know, so I don't care if he eats peanut butter cookies because I've made them. I know what's in it. And it's not processed, but I would probably freak out if he had a Twinkie that has a shelf life of 7 years.
But you're gonna walk over to some mom's house and he's gonna have a Twinkie in his mouth, and you're like, "What?
I know. I'm gonna lose my marbles. I will."
One Twinkie is gonna be fine. His insides will not be preserved for the rest of his life.
I know. I get so crazy about preservatives and preserved food and food replacement type stuff. Like, yeah. I'll have to send you guys, I'll have to find this article about the specific things that they put in, especially like low-fat crackers or low-fat, you know, cakes and chips and things that they replace for texture because we wouldn't eat them if, you know, so we remove the fat and put back in things that are like, you know, gelatin or hooves of cows or, you know, like
it's pretty disgusting.
Really gross. So, so I don't mind so much, and I don't really think that I gain that much more or I gain weight from having real milk.
But you are preggers, though, so who knows?
Well, since even before I was pregnant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it depends on how much milk you're drinking because you're saying you're not drinking that milk. And I think a lot of people.
A little in my cereal, a little in my tea, that's it.
Because many health experts recommend you do the low, you know, the 2% or 1% milk because they say you actually get more calcium and nutrients out of those and they're better for your heart. So people, you know, battling heart disease or wanting
all
to avoid
die.
It. Or,
yeah.
We're all going to, yeah. But that can be to anything. Oh, BPA, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But, so
we just have to pick our individual battles, I think.
Have you guys read any Michael Pollan? And I'm just a really big fan of that philosophy about, you know, keeping food whole and keeping food. You should read In Defense of Food. It's about how, you know, moms, like, it used to be that the mother knew best when it came to food, and then the marketing campaigns have completely taken the power out away from mothers and told them, you know, you need this type of milk, you need this type of butter, you need this type of bread. And so mothers start to question what they knew from the old world, and now we're all so confused. And so, and you know, there's a lot of science that backs up that when you just stop effing with stuff, it's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it gave me a really good, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say convenience came in and then it's changed the way people have done things for decades now, and everyone's saying, oh, it's okay, we did it. I mean, mac and cheese, Kraft mac and cheese, what? It's totally fine. It's kind of gross.
Yeah, it is.
Stuff and all that, but everyone's like, oh, it's fine, you know, this is okay for your kids, or kids are expected to eat this. This is for kids.
Right.
That's why.
But it gives me a good perspective, though, because then I'm not going to freak out if he has cake, as long as I know it's real ingredients, you know? Whereas I think before, the like me at 16 that lived on snack wells and pasta with no sauce.
Me too.
You know, what was I doing to myself? And I thought that that was nutrition.
Yeah. Low-fat Ritz crackers.
Well, yeah, I was downing like hot dogs. Great. You know what that does to you?
Hot dogs.
Seriously, I would eat like two before every one of my basketball games, or after. I can't remember. But.
Oh, my gracious. All right. Well, we're talking about food. Shall we talk about Bake Me a Wish?
Yes, which is cake. Much better than hot dogs.
All right. So Bake Me a Wish is another show sponsor of the Mommy Beta podcast, and they are something that I can give two thumbs up to. Although I will say I haven't read the ingredients list. I do know that it's a company that makes delicious cakes. They sent one for my husband's birthday. We got one that was the carrot cake, and I ate half of it while he was gone away at CES because it was so good. And it was delicious. I ate some of it for breakfast. So this is just a site where you go to bigmeawish.com and you order up a cake for any occasion. And remember, Valentine's Day is coming up soon. So if you don't feel like baking, which I never feel like baking, I've made a post about this on Mommy Beta, then order it up. They're not that expensive. They can guarantee when they arrive, and it's just such a nice little thing of convenience. And especially if you're preggers like us, you need this stuff.
Carrot cake sounds so good right now.
I can't even tell you how good this carrot cake is.
Cream cheese frosting?
I can't. Yes. Yep. I had it for breakfast one day. It was so good.
Oh, I love cake for breakfast. Or pie for breakfast.
Mm. Yeah, with a nice hot cup of tea. Delicious. Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you, Bake Me a Wish.
Thank you very much. All right. So just like in my first pregnancy, I've done a lot of reading this pregnancy. And I think it's just because TV makes me feel groggy, and I already feel groggy. So I got through these two books that I thought that I would share. One is called Mind in the Making, 7 Essential Skills Every Child Needs. And the second one I read is called Potty Training Bootcamp. So I thought that I would just throw those out there because I do highly recommend the both of them. Now, I will say I haven't started potty training yet. I was going to start it this weekend, but my mother-in-law is coming to town, and she said that my father-in-law would not really have the patience for this because you have to go on a timer where you put him on the timer every 10 minutes and let him sit there. And she's like, no, I don't think Poppy's going to really like that. So we're going to start next weekend. But Mind in the Making, I've been thinking a lot about early childhood development and how I can encourage learning. Miles, you know, I heard you guys talk about all the books a couple weeks ago. Miles doesn't have a lot of patience for books. You know, the really short ones we can get through, but then he's off on his toys. So I just wanted to help educate myself on how I can continue to make learning fun for him. How do you guys get your kids to sit through books? Unless it's bedtime, of course.
I just have a ton of books sitting around, and I don't know if maybe that's one of the ways she knows that she has my full attention, if she goes and grabs it and brings it over to me, and, Mommy, read to me, Mommy, read to me, and there are a couple of them she just loves, and she just brings them over all the time, and we flip through them that way, but to a point, I can't remember what age it was, that she just really had no interest. And I was thinking, how is it possible that she's not liking books and Miles is listening to The Hobbit? I mean, how is this possible?
Well, yeah, that was, you know, before he was mobile. But now he'll see his dancing Mickey Mouse across the room and he wants to go get that instead. So he will for a little bit, for a short time, but, you know, and at bedtime he'll read books, but...
And I've heard one of the things with toddlers is that it doesn't matter if they're sitting on your lap and reading the book. If you're just reading the book and they're going about their business, doing whatever it is that they want to do, that they're still getting that benefit. You know, they're still hearing the words and, you know, looking over occasionally at the pictures and that sort of thing. So I don't think they have to be concentrated sitting on your lap the whole time. If you just want to read him a story every once in a while he's playing, you know, just to kind of keep your mind busy, because how many times can you say, oh, that's really good stacking, or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, they have such short attention spans at this point. You know, I wouldn't be too worried about it.
Yeah, definitely not.
Right. But concentration is one of the seven tenets in this book, Mind in the Making. And she talks about how, you know, we live in such a crazed world where no one focuses on anything. Your iPhone's pinging. You got an instant messenger. You got an email to do. And she talks about ways to sort of help your children see projects through. And that's just one of the various things. There's so many interesting studies in this book that I just can't recommend it enough. It took me a while to get through because, like I said, I've got the toddler and I'm pregnant and everything. But I think it's a really good one. And I'm always looking for books that can help like I said, this is the stage I'm at now. So this is the stage I want to concentrate on. And then my next book that I'm reading is a very, very old book. It's 30 years old. It's called Siblings. And it's a study of how toddlers react to the birth of the second child and how that sort of rocks their world. And there are certain things that you can do as a mother that can make that less jarring for them. It's a specific case study, and it was known as kind of the first case study in this specific area. It's funny, it says that the toddlers get more jealous of the daddies than of the mommies because they start to expect that the mommy is taking care of the baby. But it did say that mommies who use this specific type of language can have the baby, the toddler, the older baby, have a bit more buy-in. If you say, oh, the baby's crying, why do you think that is, or what should we do? Then the baby is helping to figure it out. Whereas if you say, I have to change the baby's diaper now, you're taking yourself away from the baby. There's some automatic resentment there. And then they're just kind of left like, oh, she's got to do that. That has nothing to do with me. And there's actually not very much data at all that shows that children get aggressive towards their siblings. Mm-hmm. Most of the time they feel automatically protective and loving. Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, they've been used to people around them who are completely sensitive to their needs and empathetic. This new little being will not know how. And so, you know, there are just certain ways that I want to make sure that my language is inclusive so that Miles feels bought into it. Because he comes up and pats my belly and goes, pee-pee. But I don't think he really understands, you know, until we get the baby home. So
I'd be like, what is going on here?
Yeah, when does this thing go?
Oh, I was wondering, have you bought him, does he have a little baby doll, a little boy baby doll or anything to...
He knows babies. You know, he's got two little cousins, so he knows what babies are, and he's very gentle with babies. I just think the idea of having one permanently in his own house is going to really throw him.
What? You're not bathing now?
Yes. My girlfriend had a baby, and he was about 4 when the second baby was born. And, you know, he was really excited about when she was coming and everything. And a few weeks after she got home, the mom asked the little boy, you know, what do you like Emily? And he goes, yeah, but I liked her better when she was in your tummy.
How cute. Yeah. So, you know, I know this is going to be hard for him. It's hard for me, and I go through my our little special time, you know. But it's a special expanding of your family, and I take a lot of slack. Sometimes I post this on Twitter, and people are like, "Oh, you and your books, you know, just parent." And I kind of take umbrage with that. I don't like it when people say that to me, because 20 years down the line, if there was research that could have helped me and I didn't read it, wouldn't I feel, you know, like, oh, maybe if I had known this, you know, like, I don't see any harm in over researching parenting. I know I tend to be a little studious when it comes to parenting, but I just don't.
It's good because you can post your summary of all these books you're reading, because I know I'm not going to. Getting to them.
I'm happy to. But, you know, I remember when I was pregnant with Miles, I was reading Baby 411, and someone was like, well, when the baby comes, you can just throw that book out the window. And, you know, it's all going to be trial and error. And you know what? It wasn't. I had a lot of information at my at my fingertips that helped a lot. So do you guys get that when people are like, oh, your books, you know, just follow your instincts?
I felt kind of silly or recommending books that I had really enjoyed in pregnancy. And I actually didn't get the curiosity bug until probably around my third trimester. And then I started power reading through all these books because I was thinking I too had the thought of, oh, motherhood's natural and everyone's experiences are different. I'll just come take it as it comes. But then as I got closer, I started thinking, well, all these people have done this before. Surely there's stuff to learn here and I can just take and choose. And one of the things I was most nervous about was nursing, because all you hear from the first time moms are, you know, is how hard nursing is and how it doesn't come easy. And so for that, I knew it wasn't something I could prepare for. I knew it wasn't something I could control because my body was going to have a mind of its own. But what I wanted to do was just read as much as I could about it to know, you know, have an idea of what to expect. What are some things that I could do around that? And then similar to your Baby 411 book, I read another book called, I think it was Eat, Sleep, Poop or something like that. And I really enjoyed that book and thought it gave me a lot of insight on what to do in different situations. So I would say definitely would, I'm pro reading as much as you can if you have the time to do it. I haven't had any time really to read anything other than a short article. But
yeah. I guess I'm just pretty honest with myself and knowing that, you know, I'm not going to get through very many books. It takes me forever to read a book. I do a lot of audiobooks actually, and I don't know. I've never thought about downloading a parenting book. I guess I could. But the only book I read during pregnancy is I did, you know, What to Expect a little at a time as we were going along. And then I read the Healthy Sleep Habits book, which was, you know, it was super helpful. But I just didn't devote myself to reading, you know, maybe I should have, but I feel like I've done pretty well. I feel like what I do instead is I like to go to classes and speakers and things. Like I went to a speaker the other night about raising happy kids, and I feel like I can get a lot of good information in an hour or two. And then, you know, I have, you know, kind of the basics of what I need and don't have to devote hours and hours of my time to reading. Although there is one book that Dominic's godfather gave me, and he's kind of a conservationist and is very interested in nature. And this book is called Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. And this is actually next on my reading list. Basically, you know, I grew up, and even Sean grew up, in a place where we could just go outside and run and play in a stream and, you know, catch frogs and do all that kind of stuff. And, you know, unless we hit the lottery, Dominic's not really going to have that chance. So I want to see what I can do to make sure he has that sense of being a part of this big natural surrounding, and what I can do when, you know, he's got, you know, a 2,000 square foot backyard to play in instead of, you know, 6 acres.
But it's not really, it's not the books that I'm touting so much, although I do think that I've chosen some really great books, and then there's some books that I don't recommend. But it's the pursuit of knowledge that I think that I'm defending here. And it's kind of, I'm raging against the old attitude of like, oh, just do go with your gut. Because you know what? We live in a world that your gut's not always going to tell you like what happens when we start to see our kids sexting or, you know, having inappropriate, you know, relationships on Facebook. Like we need help. We need to be in pursuit of information. And I know that at the end of the day, my kids will be able to say, look, my mom didn't know everything, but she tried her best to figure it out and have the, in, you know, arm herself with information. But another tenet in this book, Mind in the Making, says that kids learn best when they see their parents in constant pursuit of learning. So it doesn't matter what it is you're learning. You know, if you're always, if you're challenging yourself, we're reading blogs, we're talking about it with our friends, we're going to classes, like you said, books, maybe magazines, the newspaper. Kids who live in a household where the newspaper comes every day or is read on an iPad, I suppose, are kids who have better concentration. So, you know, I think it's the pursuit of knowledge and the fact that And like I said, I reject this notion that everything in parenting is innate, because I don't think that's true.
I agree.
Really,
I
think quickly too,
we can arm ourselves.
Sorry about that background noise. We're having some work done here. But I was just curious, in my own pursuit of knowledge with this potty training book, with the timing that you have to do, is there anything else that the book shares on getting that started, or is it just putting them on the potty every 10 minutes?
No, it has a whole... thanks for turning off your jackhammer. It has a whole sort of pre-potty training steps that you can take. And it's funny because Natalie talked about this on another potty training, or another podcast rather, about how, you know, she and Dominic go and flush the poo-poo and say bye-bye to the poo-poo. And so there's this whole step about, you know, training them to, or pre-steps that you can take, bringing them with you into the bathroom, even taking their favorite stuffed animals. When you go to the bathroom, you sit down and say, "Mommy's going pee-pee right now." And then you take, Miles has a Philly Bear, and you take Philly Bear, and you put Philly Bear on the toilet and say, "Okay, Philly Bear's turn now." And
then that makes me nervous that Philly Bear's going to end up in the toilet.
You have to hold him. And to be honest, that wouldn't be so bad.
We can replace him with a Lucille.
We can get a giant spare. But yeah, so there is a, it's definitely this one. You can read this book in a couple hours. It's 58 pages long.
That's what I'd actually read.
Yeah, I got it on Kindle and, you know, went right through it in one day. But the pre-training, I think, is worth it. I just found this statistic to be so amazing about how the average age of potty training has gone up every decade for the past 60 years. And I was telling my husband about that, and he's like, "That doesn't surprise me. We just didn't coddle kids back then. We expected that they would, you know, be able to learn to keep up with the family and then get out to work on the farm."
Yeah.
So, but also, you know, everyone was using cloth diapers back then, so they didn't want to keep washing them.
And I think there probably are some positive psychological effects of pushing potty training back a little bit. I mean, how many, you know, 12-month-old babies really are ready? I don't know. I feel like for the most part, the pushing back of potty training is because of the convenience of disposable diapers and, you know, us kind of coddling kids more. But I think to an extent, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing that it's moved back a little bit. You know, kids to be kind of more mentally prepared for it, in my opinion.
Right, but she does talk about how the first pediatrician to recommend waiting until they're ready was sponsored by Procter & Gamble, who made the first disposable diaper. It may not be Procter & Gamble, it may have been another. But anyway, you know, there's a direct correlation between the fact that the size of diapers has gone up and the age of diaper training has gone up, and, you know, that doctors are sponsored by these companies. And, you know, I mean, they want to make money. Diapers, it's the best business ever to be in, because you have definite clients.
So. Just like kids who go to daycares or around older kids who aren't using the potty, from what I've heard from other parents, seem to catch on earlier. I don't know if that's something you guys have thought about, or since both of your kids are in daycare, if they have potty training regulation restrictions or anything like that, they have to be out of a diaper by a certain age.
I don't know.
We don't have anything like that. But, most of the kids, one of the days that he goes, most of the kids are older. They're, you know, 3 or maybe 4. And he sees them, you know, going in the potty. And, you know, I'm sure that has a good effect on him. And he kind of associates that with, you know, being a big kid. And, you know, I can't imagine that'll hurt down the road.
Yeah. Well, wish me luck, because when my in-laws leave, we're going to buckle down and do our potty training boot camp, and we'll see. But, you know, he checks off on all of the things that, you know, that you're supposed to check off if they're ready. So we'll see what happens.
I'm excited to hear how it goes. We're thinking about doing it in the spring.
Okay. Well, I will beta test the potty training and let you guys know. Before we wrap up this podcast, I know we've gotten a little long in the tooth today, but we had a lot of fun things to talk about. I want to remind everyone that we are always giving away fun things on mommybeta.com. We've got a great necklace we're giving away right now, which I actually kind of want, a cookbook. We've got tons of stuff. So make sure that you're going there regularly. And to finish off the podcast, we always share a little victory, which is just something that we're all cheering for each other about. And I thought I would share this week because I had a big weekend. I did my first participation in an activity at my son's school. So they had World Festival Day, and our class, we are the Pandas. We had Canada. And so we needed to bring something that was from the culture of your assigned country. And then every class had their whole classroom decorated like the country. And then they had food and they had music. And my son had an absolute blast because he loves it there. He was playing around in the gym. And so, I mean, he didn't even eat. I've made these things called Nanaimo bars, which are kind of weird, I don't know, chocolatey things from British Columbia. And so I brought them, but I was just kind of like, I wasn't feeling that well. I didn't want to do it. But at the same time, I was like, no, I want to be a participant in my son's education. So the fact that I pulled it together and brought something to offer to the class, you know, and there was only three mommies that brought stuff.
Oh, wow.
It was definitely a little victory for me.
Good job, Nat.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm a mom. I participate.
I think that's great. I think it's a good example to see kids or to have kids see their parents, you know, taking an active role in their education. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and again, that's another tenet of this book is the more, you know, involved you can be in their education, the more they can get excited about sharing it with you. And then, you know, at the end of the day, you can ask them more specific questions, because if you ask them yes or no questions, like, did you enjoy school today? Yeah. That's the end of the conversation. It doesn't really prolong the learning.
Right.
But if you've been involved, you can say, well, you know, I mean, he's not going to be able to answer this question now, but I can say, you know, what did we see when we went to Egypt, you know, or what did we do in Brazil, or that kind of thing, because you were there and you were participating. So so I pulled it together for my little one, and I was proud of myself for that.
Well done.
Yay.
All right, Jennifer, we'll let you get back to your sandblasting.
Cutting a hole in my ceiling. But we have no heat. We're replacing our 40-year-old furnace, and it's 40 degrees here. But it's been great catching up with you ladies today.
Indeed, indeed. I know I get a little pedantic on these podcasts.
Pedantic, word of the day.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I get very, like, me and my books, I get a little fired up, but hopefully I didn't offend anyone.
I'm sure you didn't. We all offend each other now and then.
That's what motherhood is all about.
It totally is. I wouldn't apologize to my kid for being pedantic. Just see. All right. Thank you for joining us. You can always tweet us at Mommy Beta, find us on Facebook, or just write us mb@mommybeta.com, or just go to mommybeta.com. Participate in the conversation. Thank you for listening. Have a lovely day, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Hey.
Bye.
You and me, happy as can be, flying through the park on our bikes on a Sunday afternoon. You and me, rolling on the floor, practicing your somersaults, your cartwheels, your donkey kicks and more. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms. Today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud of you. Drawing pictures wild and free, while the paint goes flying, your big smile, it brightens up the room. You and me, reading books in bed, your head on my shoulder, your eyes on the pages ahead. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms. Today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud of you.